For June the 19th, 2020, we talk about Resident Evil Revelations, Layers of Fear 2, and we ask you about your favorite vehicles in games. A little disclaimer here at the front. This episode has the pitch shifting problem again on Jala's track. I am close to figuring out what is going on. You're going to hear some garbling in her audio as well. Sounds like a connection thing. We're going to figure out what needs to be done. But I've gone through, tried to fix everything. Understand I might not have caught all of it. But anyway, welcome to level 333. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendez.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. It is episode number 333. Do you guys know what that means?
We're half evil.
Absolutely nothing.
We're half evil. But which half?
I like half evil better.
Jala, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah. I finally dug myself out of the cistern.
Well, it's good. It's good to have you back on. It's the quarantine has made it weird because none of us have anywhere to go. So
that's okay. I got all kinds of shit to talk about.
Yeah. Well, what you been up to?
Okay. Well, first off, it's Men's Health Month and it's also Pride Month. So happy Pride, and also men, all of you and everybody listening who is a man, mm-hmm. Go get your damn physical.
Yeah. No. I've
damn
got
it. Yeah. Health.
Okay. I've got a doctor's appointment next month.
Good.
And okay. Dentist too.
Yay! I just went to the dentist, but that's not exciting. So I'm going to talk about something else. I decided that I'm going to start doing burlesque dance, and I have started taking burlesque classes, and I'm about to, like, I'm in the middle of working on a choreography already that I am going to record, and when I do, it's not like, yeah, it's sexy, but it's not going to be like I'm stripping clothes off or anything. Like, I'm going to be in a dress and that kind of thing. But anyway, I will be posting that up on the internet when I am done doing it, because I am going to rent the dance studio and record it once I've finished it and make it look really nice, dress up and the whole nine, because I'm not going anywhere or doing anything fun. So I'm going to make my own fun.
Yeah. So a lot of your extracurriculars involve getting bunches of folks in. Bunches of folks lined up.
Yeah.
Gala the duck feed whip.
Well, and then also on that note, I also stopped recording video of my daily workouts for, like, I don't know, 2 weeks or something. And then I started getting all these messages from people saying, Jala, where are your workout videos? I miss seeing you. And so now I finally started doing that again. Because, like, for a while I was like, it takes a lot of time to do that, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I mean, you know, it's partially like, hey, guess what, guys? I'm a trainer. I can train you. But, like, it had, you know, it hadn't brought in any new customers or anything. It was just, you know, people ask me, like, hey, I'm going to add that to my routine, you know? And, like, yeah, that benefits them.
Right.
That's great. but, I mean, it doesn't really help me, and it's a lot of time off of my day to do that. But, you know, then again, it also is helping people be encouraged and, like, you know, keep pushing. Like, I got all these messages where people are like, no, seeing your post made me get up and do stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, I got to go be inspiring and stuff, I guess.
Oh, geez.
So, damn it.
That's a lot to take on.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm back to that. I will not necessarily post everything all the time or even every day. I will just post when I can. And when I can't, I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah.
So,
I love the idea that your videos are like the yawn of working out, that when, you know, you see someone else doing it and then you have to get up and do it yourself.
But seriously, there are a lot of people who message me and they're like, I just had to try that thing that you did in that video or whatever. And they will like follow along with whatever it is I'm doing. And, you know, like, they're like, I gotta try that.
Just wait till you post your burlesque videos.
I actually have already been posting a few little practice, like, quick little practice bits, and so, you know, that's a thing. But right. I have not had anybody tell me that they have followed along with that yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, it's
so
good to...
How about you guys?
Yeah. I've got nothing. I was, so last week when I said that the
bird?
Yeah, no, I've got a handful of birds. I got a bird family. I tried to get a picture of the mama feeding the birds, but they but she got spooked and flew off. But I know where her hiding spot is. So if I get rid of that, like if I just get rid of all of the hiding spots, she won't have anywhere to run to. So then maybe she won't run away. I'm trying to solve this like a Zelda puzzle.
That's not how that works, Cole.
I know. Yeah.
Cole, you had like the magical cul-de-sac in Cincinnati.
With the cottontail rabbit and the deer and stuff like
and
that.
And the singing, yeah, the singing squirrels and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then this is happening to you up in Mansfield. I think it's you, man. I think you are like the Snow White of podcasters.
Yeah, I remember when I talked about my animal friends in Cincinnati, people said, "Oh, you're a Disney princess." And I tweeted about we have a family of skunks in the neighborhood. And they're fucking adorable. They walk up and down the street like they own the place. I tweeted about them. They'd be like, people said, "Yo, you're giving off some real big Disney princess energy here." So at a certain point, I can't disagree. So
princess confirmed.
That's got to be.
Well, hey, it's got to be okay.
It's
like that one time I helped that wild dove that just came out of nowhere, and you know, it was just like hanging on to me, and I'm like, okay, I have a dove friend now. That's cool, and whatnot.
Yeah, so. But last week when I said that the birds had hatched, I was premature. I think I was hearing other stuff. Today, definitely, I saw that the mama was not sitting in the nest. She wasn't brooding on it. She was kind of like perched on the edge. So I figured, okay, something's different here. And then I heard the beeps. And then I left the house to go take her stuff. I came back and I saw the little baby birds popping their beaks up. And I, you know, got up on tiptoes and I saw... Yep, that's baby robins. They look like scrotums with necks. So,
baby birds are so ugly. I am a bird person, but baby birds are ugly as hell.
It just depends, because like you know, you've got the precocious ones and you have the non-precocious ones. So, like precocious ones that hatch and can walk around, you got like a chicken, you know, like a baby chick. That thing will be walking around. You get a baby duck. Those things mm-hmm. walk around. But then you get baby crows. Then you get baby robins. And yeah, no, they're super, super ugly. So the mama's super skittish. Man. But I've been eyeing her from afar, bringing them worms. So at this point, it's okay. They're not too loud yet.
Well, baby owls, they look like tumbleweeds of dust. Something
like
weird and dusty.
Yeah. Well, the nice part is that they grow up very quickly. So these things will be fledged. They'll be out of here in about 10 days, and I will miss them as I'm cleaning up there. As I'm cleaning up their old nest.
Yeah. Okay, they'll be back next year. Don't worry about it.
I think I'm gonna put some nails up there, so it doesn't happen again. There, I'm gonna
ice princess.
Right? No, I'm gonna build. I have several trees on my property. I'm gonna build some nesting platforms. Okay.
Perfect.
Yeah, I just don't want them nesting close to the house because I have no. You know, I don't want them staining the wall.
Yeah. Okay. This is acceptable, Elsa.
I love that Cole. Oh, sorry. I don't know if you're a story. No. I love that Cole is like, you know, I've let these people nest in my door, and I think with a year's warning, I'm going to build a new place for them to go instead of the immediate one. And everyone's like, "Oh, you monster!" Like, that is the most a human has ever done for a bird.
Yeah, no, but that's all that's been going on. The only other things I could talk about are being sick, but that is not interesting or fun. I like my baby bird story better. So mm-hmm. that's how
good
story. That's how it goes. Yeah,
cool story, bro. We saw the pictures. It happened.
Oh, I was happy to be able to get a snap of those sweet sweet babies, or at least the mama. How about you, Dennis? What's going on?
Yeah, I think the exciting thing for me is Origins Online, or the lack thereof. So this borders into like headline territory,
okay,
and boss territory. But you know, Origins Online got canceled for being very slow to, you know, be clear on whether or not they were racist, which they've tried to recover from all that with Honor and stuff. But part of that has been, hey, we're just going to cancel it for this year.
Okay.
Which is right. It makes sense given everything that went down. But also I was planning on doing a big push of Deck of Wonders demos mm-hmm. there. And so I've been trying to kind of gather together people that had events planned that still want to run them independently as a fundraiser for the Black Lives Matter movement. Mm-hmm. And so those events are kind of now opened up to anyone who's interested. So if you've heard me talk about Deck of Wonders on the show, if you are interested in giving it a try next weekend, I will be running events basically the entirety of Friday, Saturday, and Sunday that people with Tabletop Simulator are welcome to pop into and check the game out.
Oh, so you're doing it in Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah, yeah. I got set up and it is beautiful.
Nice.
So I'm excited to share with people. Anyone with Tabletop Simulator can check it out. The events are free, but it's suggested if you can to donate mm-hmm. To blacklivesmatter.com. And then I've also got a list of other creators, et cetera, that are still running events, creators and GMs. And so, yeah, hopefully it's a thing.
Nice. Yeah.
Fill in the vacuum of Origins. So I'll post that in the Slack. I'll post it on Facebook. And by the time you hear about it, mm-hmm. You should be able to jump right in and sign up pretty much for events happening immediately.
Nice.
So go check it out right now.
Cool.
On Facebook, I assume.
One assumes. Yeah. Nice. How about you, Ben? What's going on?
Not much. Mostly the news is about like the city. We don't have protests anymore. We have a nice happy area, kind of, more or less.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is near you, right? The Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's two names for it. There's like Chaz and Chop.
Right. I prefer Chop. Because Chaz sounds like somebody who wears a sweater around his neck on a boat.
Yeah. And then
I know one Chaz, and he was a travel agent writer.
Huh.
So fits right in with your description. He was an amazing guy. But I'm sure that there are pictures of him with a sweater.
Yes. Around his neck. Yeah.
Yeah. So it basically the thing that was interesting about it is like I heard about this through conservative friends first, where before I even heard about like what was going on a mile from my house. But and they were asking like, oh, we heard that these people like took over part of the city, and like cue like Fox News articles where it shows weird photoshopped images of people with guns.
Oh, straight up doctored. Like they had to pull them down and they like quietly apologized for it.
Yeah, so it's not like that at all, but that was a very weird thing to see in like national news, like very big misrepresentations of what was going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, basically it's like kind of like a giant block party, but with more like significance behind it, I guess. I went there on Saturday and listened to like one speaker for maybe just like a half an hour or so, and then just kind of walked around the area. Mm-hmm. But basically, they shut down the streets on about like maybe 2 to 3 blocks worth of space, and so it's like a pedestrian zone now, which is really nice.
Hmm.
Which I hope that they keep even after all of this kind of goes down, mm-hmm. Just because way more people can utilize it, and it's not really busy streets to begin with.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's basically different community organizers, and they're basically still protesting for the list of demands that they have, which they have 3. And it's basically release protesters from prison, defund the police, and then take the money that you use to defund that and put it in community-involved, like social health, social welfare programs. Mm-hmm.
That sounds about in line with the other stuff I've heard about. Yeah.
Yeah. So all that was pretty interesting. But on the plus side, I got to hang out with some friends, too, and meet up and walk around that area. Hmm. So it was nice to see people face to face, which is
not something not that happens.
Yeah.
Mask to mask. Please say mask to mask.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, it was mask to mask. And that was one thing that was nice, too, is like everybody seemed to be very responsible. Everybody had masks on outside and stuff, and everyone was keeping space between one another. So
that's good.
All of that seemed good. But
nice.
Yeah. I'm still kind of waiting for I obviously I hope nothing bad happens, but it seems like such a tenuous situation right now where it seems like if any one thing goes wrong, then the whole thing might fall apart.
But it's got big Occupy energy from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, has less to do with like being out like outright chaos and more to do with like just kind of like weird factional kind of like infighting kind of stuff. But I mean, yeah. I've seen plenty of footage, like video of people, you know, who are associated with the autonomous zone, like calmly escorting agitators out saying like, hey, you're going to fuck this up. Like, just go. Like, just leave. Yeah. We don't need anybody here throwing rocks. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which, it's ridiculous that, you know, from, 3 or 4 months ago, the tactics that were used to, you know, hurt Hong Kong protesters in terms of, like, people coming in with the intent to be agitators, etc. We're watching all that same shit play out in front of us here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, my God, this, you know, Hong Kong is so effed up. Only with the Chinese government could you. It's here. Hey, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's scary and demoralizing, but it has been, I don't know, just, you know, when I've had the chance on Twitter to retweet photos of massive demonstrations around the world. That is seeing those, not retweeting them, but seeing the massive demonstrations has been heartening to me. Personally.
It sounds like, Ben, now in that area you're getting to see a lot of the best in people.
Yeah, it's definitely it's a big contrast to a week ago when it was like helicopters overhead, you hear explosions every other night. It's much better than that. I was gonna encourage, there's a channel on Twitch, it's called like twitch.com/woke, which, apologies for the name or whatever, that's a very weird name. Mm-hmm. But it covers like protests around the like US. And so like it'll have like maybe 9 different streams at once. And so you can see kind of what's going on in every area. But I would encourage people to look at that before they like read coverage that may or may not be completely wrong. So
yeah. What were we gonna say, Joel?
Well, George Floyd was from Houston, Third Ward in Houston. Yeah. And so the protests here, there were arrests and there were some things, you know, some people trying to vandalize shit and things like that. But for the most part, everything was peaceful. There's still stuff going on, but like, you know, the bulk of the demonstrations and protests and things were largely, you know, in Third Ward where George Floyd came from. Mm-hmm. And then with his family marching down to City Hall, and things like that. Like, I think for that march, there were like 60,000 people. And, you know, so it's been, for the most part anyway, fairly well calm here. And all of that. So luckily it I don't see going on here in Houston, the same level anyway of, you know, violence that's happening in other places and things like that. So, I was not on the episode when all of that was hot and heavy, but I was definitely in the middle of a lot of that stuff, just like everybody else on the podcast here and the listeners have been.
Well, the work's far from over.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, I'm going to try to stop myself from being bummed out right now. We can talk about video games. Talking about video games.
That's okay. I will distract the shit out of you when I start on my grind. And since that's the next section. And since
now, are you talking about burlesque dancing or are you talking about the podcast?
Well, I don't know. What do you want me to do?
Since this is audio, we can do the podcast.
I'm a woman of many talents. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. Since it's a podcast format, I would assume. Video games would be next.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so it sounds like you want to do the regular kind of really kind of episode. We've got the grind, got the multiplayer, and then we got the end boss there. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you have been away the longest. That is an understatement. So I'm going to go to you first.
I got such a backlog of games to talk about, guys. So I'm gonna talk about a couple of them today, and then I'm just gonna have to be on the show some more so I can talk about more. So first one I'm gonna bring up is Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth. So I was talking in Slack with listener Nervous about how good the Danganronpa music is, and they mentioned other games with that composer. And one of those games was Digimon Story Cyber Sleuth. And since I hadn't played a Digimon game in years, I asked about it, and then I decided to take a look. It's on Switch, and it happened to be on sale at the time that I was looking at it, and so Dave bought it for me. And the Switch version contains both the original game as well as the sequel, Hacker's Memory. So it's a 2-for-1.
Okay.
The type of game that it is an RPG with a lot of dot hack DNA, at least as regards the storyline. Like, there's a lot going on that really reminds me of the dot hack series.
And that it takes place inside of like an MMO, or?
It's inside of a cyberspace place with a little avatars, and people are like going into a coma. Like, it's literally that level of same kind of thing that's going on, you know, in the dot hack world, where people are, you know, like not being able to log out, and they're like, you know, in a coma and things like that. The game starts with your character hanging out in a chat room, and suddenly a hacker pops up and tells everybody to come to a certain place within Eden, which is a digital network that you can log into with your physical body. Most everybody says that it's too sketch, but you and a hacker friend of yours, and then like this other person who's just dumb, I guess. I don't know. She doesn't really strike me as being all that, you know, having all the lights on in the house or anything. Anyway, they all decide to go and check it out, and you arrive in a seedy part of Eden called Kowloon and are given the Digimon capture program by a hacker who then locks you into the sketch place. So while you're searching for an exit, you come across the leader of a hacker group who teaches you how to capture Digimon, and then a big monster attacks you, and like your hacker friend manages to create an exit for you to get out of this place you got trapped in, but the monster grabs you right as you try to log out and corrupts your logout process.
Okay. So,
as a result, when you pop back up in the real world, you're half digitized and you're in the middle of Shinjuku, but like you look basically like television static or something, but like you're an outline of a person with like static. And so you're in the middle of Shinjuku, and then like a booby lady detective named Kuremi drives up, tosses some pickup line at you, and then rescues you. So I don't know what that's all about. But anyway, she has a love of weird cases and decides that your case is pretty weird. And so she helps you come up with a normal looking body out of different data bits that you find in Eden. And you basically, you know, I guess kind of patch yourself up, but you're still not like healed or fixed or anything. Like, we don't know where your actual body is, but you know, you resemble a normal person now. And
close enough.
And you can physically jump into a network and force your way in. Now that you're like a weird half digital being. So she thinks that you'd be of a stellar assistance to her as she tries to figure out what's going down, you know, with this sickness that's, you know, making all these people. So all these people are going into a coma. So she thinks, well, you can be a help of, you know, when I try to figure what this thing is.
It sounds weirdly like Persona 4. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah. It's also kind of like Persona 4. It's got that kind of thing going on too. So, the sickness is called the Eden syndrome. That's big surprise. You know, and you find out in the first couple of chapters of snooping around that you are an Eden syndrome victim that is in the hospital, and that a specific company, Kamishiro Industries, is isolating all the people with the syndrome in a special no access wing of the hospital, which also sounds like Steins Gate Zero.
Right.
So anyway, it's of course some evil overlord crap, and it's up to you and Kuremi to figure out what's going on and how to fix everything, including your body, because you're still not actually a human. Your body is in a coma over there, and like you're a digital goop. I don't know.
Yeah.
So you have a chat program, much like in Steins Gate. Although Steins Great would be pretty good too. anyway,
that's the tagline for my review.
Yeah. So you can talk to your friends and reply to them, and you can also talk to the Digimon that you have that are on a farm, which I'll talk to you about the farm in a minute.
I was gonna say, this is the longest I've heard someone talk about Digimon without mentioning Digimon.
I know, right? So, talking about Digimon, let me go into the gameplay. You can control up to 3 Digimon at a time, and you can have 3 more in reserve with you. Basically, your Digimon, depending upon how strong they are, take up different amounts of points, and you have like a total amount of points you can, fit into your little digital device that you're, I guess, summoning these things from or whatever. So that's how that works out. The Digimon attack, and they use special moves, but you can also take one of their turns to use an item on them. So, like, they don't use items. You're standing behind them, and, like, instead of them doing something, you can, step in and use an item on them instead. The Digimons all have a max level, after which they will not get any more levels until they are Digivolved. So different Digivolutions are available depending upon your stats. And there are different stat boost items that you can use to force Digivolutions, but you have to either come across those in the world, earn them, or buy them or something. You acquire new Digimon by coming across them in combat over and over again. And as you do, you have like this little analysis meter thing that goes up until you can actually create that Digimon. And you can, after the first time you've seen it, or you've seen it a couple of times, you can recreate that Digimon, but it starts out with lower stats and a lower level until like you've analyzed it long enough to, have like a fully fledged version of it.
Okay.
So you also have a Digifarm where you can keep all of your other Digimon that are not on your person at the time. And they can train and level up while you're off doing stuff. And they also randomly will quiz you about Digimon stuff. Like, what's the Digimon called that blah? You know, and so, you have to answer Digis.
Well, Digitrivs, huh?
Yes.
What do you get in return for answering them correctly?
I don't know. They tell you you're awesome. I don't know. Like, that's all that's happened so far to me. They're like, you're right. You're awesome. Okay. It's just something that happens in the game. But I don't know if there's actually eventually some kind of a bonus for it. Like, you get enough of them right, and then something happens. I don't know. Anyway, the Digifarm is on real time, like a Tamagotchi, and the gameplay clock still goes when you have the Switch in sleep mode. So my Digimon Cyber Sleuth thinks that I have been playing it for like 100 hours, and it's like, actually, it's just been in sleep mode on my nightstand, and I have no idea how long I've been playing it as a result. The play clock is just going.
Yeah.
So, but that also means that the Digi Farm is also still going, and all of your little dudes are leveled up while you are asleep or whatever, and you're Switch is on sleep mode. So I found that out. That's an unintended thing. I didn't intend for that to happen, but that sure does happen when I'm playing it. And I'm not going to exit out every single time and like have to load it back. Like, that takes too much time and effort. So
yeah, no, just put it to sleep.
Yeah, I just put it to sleep. So whichever Digimon is leader of the island makes a difference as to how successful different instructions that you give them are. Like, say, for example, if the Digimon that you have in charge is a thinker, like, intellectual Digimon, but then like you're having them train physically doing, fighting and leveling up, then that's not going to go very well, and they're not going to get as much out of it because you don't have the right kind of leader for that job.
Mm-hmm.
Your Digimon really quickly end up leveling, so you don't really get attached to a specific form.
No.
And you can cannibalize Digimon, guys.
Do they call it that?
You can pull lower level Digimon from your combat experience and feed them to bigger ones and give the big ones more XP and abilities by feeding them the little Digimon.
Gotcha. So, I mean, like in Pokemon Go, it's a, you know, it's barely a euphemism where like you take a Pokemon and turn it into candy and then feed it. So in this one, like, do you just have them just taking bites out of each other as like they're crisp apples, or
I don't think they don't I don't feed them to each other, but like I would imagine like I don't need to feed them to each other, like my Switch is always on, so it's always
so leveling up, so they're always growing. So, yeah
I don't need to cannibalize the Digimon, but like I would imagine that they would not animate it in such a terrible violent way, but then again, I have no idea because I have not done it. I should try. As you Digivolve, though, you gain more abilities, and there are more, like any number of different paths you can take. So you can end up with all different kinds of skills, because you can also de-Digivolve back to a lower level and then switch what you change into. So all of your skill sets aren't necessarily the same. Like if you start out with two Digimon, you know, that are like two Coromons or something, and then you Digivolve them, they don't necessarily turn into the same thing. Or even if you put, you know, eventually have them as the same thing, they might have had a different path and then ended up with a bunch of different skills that they inherited from various forms along the way. So
that would drive me crazy.
It's a lot. So I don't think about it too much. I've got too many Digimon to worry about it, so I'm not worried about it. But thing about this game, the villain so far is this lady who's the daughter of the head of the evil company, and she is really way too horny, and I am saying this, me who goes to burlesque classes and things, and like I know I said that I wanted to play in a roguey, but there's a time and a place for that shit, and in the middle of an otherwise kid friendly game is not the place for this shit.
Oh, so, yeah, she is trapped in a desert. Thirsty.
Yeah. She is real thirsty. Real thirsty. And so I'm just like, I can't even with this. Why is this in here? Like, I don't even understand. So yeah. Also, the version of the game that I have is it gave me like 5 OP Digimon for no particular reason that I can suss out. Oh shoot, that didn't come out. Quick, hold on.
Oh, like a collector's edition or something?
I guess it's like a special edition. Did that work? I don't know if that second link worked. Yes, it did. Okay.
Yeah, it unfroze.
Yeah. So, like, I got all these, like, high-level ultimate Digimon for no reason. And so, like, this is how a battle went. It was ridiculous.
Yeah,
like,
just total stomp.
A total stomp. It was like, that took me 5 seconds to beat this boss character. So like as a result of that, I kind of like backed off of playing because it's not challenging. You know, mm-hmm. Because I've got like, but number one, my Digifarm keeps on going. And then number two, I also was given like 5 upper tier Digimon that don't take very many of my points. So I can have like 3 of them at any given time on my field. So it's like, it's not hard. And like, I don't know how invested I am in the weird horny lady or, you know, like the stuff that sounds like a mishmash of like, you know, 3 different other games that I played that probably are doing it better, you know? Yeah. So yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm probably going to go back and fiddle with it some more, but like, I'm not real invested in it at this point.
I mean, if they're making the play trivial in order to forefront a story that's not hooking you, it kind of sounds like there's nothing really to be there for.
I know. And so I'm like, I don't know. Like, if there's a listener out there who really, really loves Digimon Cyber Sleuth and you've got reasons, explain them to me and tell me what I'm missing. And I will give it a shot again. I have not loaded it up in a little bit, though, because I've been playing other stuff that I have been you know, sticking to and finding a little bit more interesting, which I'll talk about next, as long as there are no questions about Digimon Cyber Sleuth, which is basically a mishmash of several other games that probably did it better.
I mean, did the music live up, since that's what you went to it for?
You know, I don't even really remember much of the music, so I would say no. No, like the composer even failed me on this. Like and granted, Nervous said that this probably the weakest entry of the ones that were mentioned as being from the same composer. So okay. It's just that it happened to be like a Digimon game, and I'm like, I haven't played a Digimon game in a while, and if it's got good music, and then they're like, oh well, you know, it's not the best music, that's probably the weakest one musically, but it's an all right game, and I'm like, oh, it's a Digimon game, it looks kind of okay, like let me try it. It's kind of okay. I don't know about that play though. I don't know if I'm gonna actually beat it, is the thing. I had some fun. I might eventually pop back in and do it, just because I can fiddle with Digimons and see them beat each other up. It's fun, I guess. So anyway, so moving on. The other thing that I will talk about today is Resident Evil Revelations. So as listeners may remember, a long time ago, I tried this on Steam and I bounced right the hell off before I got anywhere. Like, I didn't even finish the first chapter. It just looked really crappy on my PC, and when it was too slow to start, I had no patience, and it also really looked like a portable handheld game, and I was just not having it on my Steam. So
yeah, I mean, and when you say it looked like a portable game, that's what it was. It was, you know, this was the 3DS one.
It was the 3DS. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was on sale recently on Switch, and Dave wanted to co-op raid mode with me, so I bought it because it was on sale and he wanted to co-op. And I'm currently exactly 2/3 of the way through. Like, I'm at the beginning of chapter 9 out of 12 chapters. So it's actually really good, guys. So I was surprised. I was like, I didn't actually anticipate liking it as much as I do, but it's a really solid game.
I've seen you posting, like posting things, and I've not read the subtitles because I want to keep myself relatively unspoiled on it. I've mostly just been like looking at your commentary and at the outrageous character designs that they decided to go with for some of these folks.
Oh, dude. Yeah, like, because I got the art book for it because I actually liked it enough. And the art book is actually, like, still being printed, so you can pick up a copy of it. And I was thumbing through the art book and I was just laughing my butt off about it. And I was, you know, of course, doing my usual tweeting commentary about everything I'm doing. And so I was tweeting pictures of some of the concepts and going, boy, these are some trash. You know? Trash, or what's going on with this, or I'm glad this wasn't in the game.
Yeah. You know?
So but anyway, so this game was released between the time of Resident Evil 5 and 6, and you can see where they made the gameplay quality of life corrections from 5. Like, you can dodge, you can reload while dodging, and while you're moving, you can shoot and move at the same time, that kind of stuff. You do have, like, if an enemy is staggered, you can do a melee attack, but you can't do it all the time. I do not believe so. I think you can do a melee attack all the time, but, like, it does extra damage if they're staggered or something. Anyway, you can see how some of that kind of led into Resident Evil 6. Melee is far more in 6 than from what I've seen in Revelations, though, except for when those enemies are staggered. Anyway. Unlike either of those games, though, it has a bit more of an actual horror feeling to it. So it's been a lot of fun to play for that reason. And I've also, along this time, been co-oping Resident Evil 6 with Dave while I'm also playing Revelations on my own. So it's pretty fresh in my mind as to all the differences and so on. And guys, there's no QTEs. No QTEs. Like,
not like a Resident Evil game.
They finally dropped the QTEs in this one.
So I have a question. Uh-huh. Oh, go ahead. Oh, yeah. Finish your thought on QTEs.
Yeah, go ahead. Question.
You mentioned that it's a little more horror focused. Like, on the scale of things, where does that fall? Because he's not here, but Dave would argue like Resident Evil 6 and probably 5 as well were very, very far from horror in favor.
Oh yeah, they were just action games with
Yeah. Critters. So like, how much does this one rein it back in?
Well, I was going to outline some stuff about the story and everything, but like basically the game, for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part, it takes place on a cruise ship. So you've already got corridors and dark places. You've got water flooding parts of it. Other things like that that cause tension. You know, so you've already got areas that can be pretty spooky or whatnot. And then some of the enemies and some of the encounters that you have are also far more horrific than they are in 5 and 6, where basically it's like, here's a monster, isn't it gross?
You know, here's like, a monster in full light. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you a little bit more about that when I get that far. I was actually going to tell you a little bit more about the story and all of that as well. But I think you'll be able to see more of the answer as I talk about it. So this story is set chronologically between Resident Evil 4 and 5, just after the BSAA was formed. Veltro, which I keep wanting to call Velcro, is the terrorist group that is still around and pissed at the FBC, the Federal Bioterrorism Commission, for their involvement of destroying, you know, the Veltro forces on Terra Grigia. And they have this nifty floating lab in the Mediterranean on the cruise ship.
Okay.
So Jill from various Resident Evil from first one on, and new dude Parker, who is like his, you know, the new guy partner in this one, go to investigate the ship and end up getting caught and put in separate rooms on the ship for some nefarious purpose. And then like you have to break out of a room without any weapons, find some weapons. You know, of course there's like monsters that you have to dodge around. When you're in that part, there's like power outages that happen and things like that where shit goes dark and you've got to deal with it. And then like, and you eventually can meet up with Parker, and then you've got to figure out what you're doing and how you can, you know, get off the ship, get back, you know, get back in contact with your people, you know, the BSAA. So you can carry 3 guns at a time, and you go to inventory crates to swap out your guns. You don't have an inventory screen, but you can only carry a certain number of bullets per gun and a certain number of herbs overall. You can get more ammo pouches to add to your utility belt, and that's how you expand your inventory along with getting upgrade parts such as a long magazine for your guns so that your guns can hold more.
Okay.
So I like that there isn't any inventory juggling. There's just making sure you get all the upgrades you can, you know, and moving on.
Yeah.
So the pacing feels really consistent and the difficulty fairly even, you know, except for this one boss fight that I think it's in either chapter 3 or 4 against the mutated comms officer. And I really want to talk about this one because I think this will help answer a little bit of Dennis's question.
Okay.
So that battle is actually a whole mood for real. Because like when you walk onto the promenade, you can hear his recording as he's trying to, you know, shoot out an SOS because, you know, the ship, at least, you know, like you find out that the ship had people on it and then they started getting infested with, you know, the stuff that was in the lab in some part of the ship, you know, came out and started, you know, attacking people. So you hear it and it's Mayday, Mayday. This is the Queen Zenobia. Emergency call number, but his voice is like warping the whole time and
okay,
like turning into a monster voice, and he's struggling to speak. And all this time, you're also hearing a loud banging from the room that he locked himself in to try and stay safe. But of course, he got bitten and he turned into a monster.
Okay,
so you're hearing this banging. You look around, and you're like, ah, shit, you know, and you know that you have to get in there and see if you can get to the comms unit to use it to call your people. Right.
Right.
So you have to fight this guy and you shoot the lock off the door and he pops out. And then there's Infinispawn zombos that come out of literally like ducks and stuff that just come after you. And you're supposed to run around the entire promenade and make use of the explodey tanks that are around. Cause of course there's red explodey tanks. But I did the Jala instead.
Okay.
there's a balcony outside of the room where homie pops out. And so when I shot the lock off, I did so from the balcony and unloaded on him through the window. Then when he ran around to come at me on the balcony, I jumped through the window into the room and he can't fit through the window. So he runs right back around to come after me again. So I basically just jumped through the window over and over again and was just shooting his ass until he died.
you got him trapped in a loop. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still had a bunch of other enemies on my ass, but luckily I had plenty of rifle ammo, and rifle is my favorite weapon. So I killed him after, I think, two or three tries, maybe, just because he has an insta-kill attack. So if you're not careful, you can get staggered by, you know, the zombos that throw stuff at you, or you can get swarmed and something will catch you, and then like while you're trying to fight that zombie off and you're staggered a little bit, then he'll come up and like slice your head open or whatever. So it's hard even if you're doing the Jala. it was not a simple fight, but it was a very, very memorable one. It was a really fantastic set piece that's really feels horrific, because you hear, like, you see some stuff that the guy wrote, and you hear his, like, dying cries and stuff when, you know, and then there's a point where while he's running around, he even says while you're fighting him, "I'm still human." Like, he's still struggling to speak.
Ooh, yeah.
And I'm still in here. So, I mean, it was, yeah, I'm still in here and you're still killing me. Wait, no, don't do that. But, you know, he can't fully control himself. So it was just really creepy, and I felt legitimately bad for him. So, you know, it was a really great, really great piece. So I stopped playing after I got about 2/3 through because shit got rough for IRL.
Right.
And I just could not handle the stress of survive the swarms of zombos part that I left off at. But I am absolutely going to finish this game and then move on to Revelations 2.
Nice.
For the record, Dave and I have yet to play raid mode. So if anybody wants to hang out with me and see how badly I play Resident Evil, you can shoot me a message and I'll send you my Switch friend code and we can do raid mode without Dave.
Rave no Dave. So, yeah.
Yes.
Nice. So are you, I mean, just to remind people, you have this on the Switch now, or you've got it on?
Yes.
Yeah, gotcha.
It's on Switch. I do also have it on Steam. Mm-hmm. I would have to go through the first chapter, because yeah, I think you have to go through the first chapter to unlock raid mode, which is why Dave and I haven't played it, because like he has to go unlock it first. But, you know, I can run through it on Steam if it's needed to co-op on Steam. I can do that too. But I prefer my Switch so I can lay in my bed and be lazy.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I am ashamed at how many games I have rebought on Switch just because it was easier to play them on that.
Down.
Yeah. Or, yeah. You know, just like not in my usual gaming spots, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, any questions, any additional questions about Resident Evil? And Dennis, did that answer kind of like what you wanted to know?
It does. I like that a lot. The it highlights the horror elements. Although it's interesting, it raised in my mind the conversation that's happening right now, not to drag us into it, about like, should games be making you feel bad about killing if they're not going to give you literally any other option? Like, that was cool with Spec Ops The Line, but
Seems
to have gone out of vogue.
Maybe.
For me, okay, my stance on that as regards very specifically the mutant comms officer is that if I were in that situation, I would be killing the comms officer.
Yeah.
And I would feel bad about the comms officer. So I think it's fine in this case.
Right.
Like, this is not like I'm killing somebody who would otherwise live a normal life. This is somebody who was turned into a creepy monster and is, yeah, he might still have a consciousness in there somewhere, but he is not going to live a normal life at all.
Additionally, it is a boss fight that is built around that mechanic, or not mechanic, that story beat, not an entire game that is, you know, who knows
questioning your morality.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Who knows how hyperbolic those reviews are being, but opposed to being a whole game that is built around that.
I mean, it's like when Star Wars came out, it's the big bad and it's always safer to hate it. And then you can say it grew on you over time than to be the one person in the room who liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask, like, where this ranked against other Resident Evil games, but since there's so many of them, would you say it's like S tier, A tier, B tier?
Okay, well, I really, really enjoy this game. Since I haven't played the last third of it, it has a potential to do any number of bad things. So I don't want to necessarily grade it yet, but as for the part that I have played thus far, I am enjoying this game not quite as much as Resident Evil 4, but quite a lot. So it's like around there somewhere.
Nice. That's pretty favorable.
Yes. Yeah. So that's very favorable. It's a totally different feel from 6 because 6 is even more action-y. Like, this one feels more like the spirit of 4 than it does the spirit of 6 or 5. So it doesn't feel right to kind of compare it to that. I think the modern remakes are a little bit closer to how this one feels, actually. Like the remake of 2 and 3, although I've mostly watched Cole play those, mm-hmm. so I can't speak, you know, super strongly about, you know, that, you know, this game versus how those play or anything. Right. But it's definitely more in the spirit of something like 4 or of, you know, remake 2 or remake 3 insofar as what they're doing with the survival horror versus the action balance. Mm-hmm. So... Hmm. Yeah, and I definitely am really enjoying it. I was surprised by how much I'm actually liking this game.
You're the first person that I've talked to who has kind of persevered into it. Everybody else, including myself, bounced off of it really hard, like you did initially. So, like, hearing your opinion about, like, the kind of middle of this kind of makes me want to dip into it. I probably want to play it for myself before I stream it, because I thought, like, oh, I can probably just put it up there. But what I don't want to do is, like, oh, dang, I don't like this. I'm going to bounce off of it. But fuck, I'm streaming and I have to finish now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a lot of different set pieces that you go through and a bunch of different modes they put you in. Like, there's a part where there's water rushing in and you have to go underwater for a little bit. But there's underwater enemies, but you can't fight them, really, because you can't shoot them. Mm-hmm. So you mostly have to dodge away from them and things, and, you know, like, there's other parts where like the pool is being taken over by gross biomass, and get this, it made me die laughing. It's like, oh, we're gonna put on the pool filter, it'll take it a while to get rid of that stuff. Oh my god.
a pool filter that's meant for, like, twigs and leaves and shit.
I know. And it's like, what kind of industrial pool filter do you think this is? Because this is like a mound going up to the diving board, guys. I don't think it's gonna work. Who's gonna clean the filter? Yeah. Anyway, but so it's got ridiculous Resident Evil stuff like that, mm-hmm. in there, but you know, for the most part, it's definitely been quite a lot of fun. I've actually had a lot of it, and I don't know for 100% fact, but I think that you would at least, like, even if you don't like it quite as much as I do, Cole, I think that you would definitely you know, find some things about it that are definitely enjoyable, even if you don't like it as much as I do.
Yeah.
But I've been having quite a bit of fun with it, though. Mm-hmm. So
nice.
Yeah.
Resident Evil Revelations. Do you have anything else?
Not for this week.
Okay. Later. Cool. Hey, Grata.
Hey girl,
just don't
squeak there.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So now you've heard from Jala, who let's hear who has something new.
Let's see.
Nobody jumping up on it?
I have something new, but I played all of 20 minutes of it before noping out. So I don't know if that counts.
Yeah, no, go for it.
So it came out free on the Epic Games Store, Ark Survival Evolved.
Okay.
And that is, like, the first person survival game, a la Wake Up With Nothing in a Dangerous Place and try to build your way to sustainability.
Like Rust or something like that.
I'm actually not familiar with Rust. I thought Rust was more of like a Skyrim type in the post-apocalypse.
You start out naked in Rust, for sure.
Yeah, Rust is like a survival builder kind of thing. Yeah.
Someone send me the Wikipedia list of games where you start naked. but yeah, so this was, you know, like in my mind, it occupied the same place as like a Terraria or a No Man's Sky or even like Minecraft, like that kind of deal. And I was feeling the itch for it. It was free, so I went for it. And got probably 90 seconds in before I was charged and killed by a dinosaur.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, hey, okay. Dinosaurs are in this game. That's cool. Like, that's a thing that happens. Survival mode. So I rolled up a new character. And I was like, okay, this time I'm going to craft me a pickaxe before I run into a dinosaur. And I did so. And here comes that dinosaur. And I'm like, okay, now I know the game. Like the same, might have literally been the same. I don't know. Low level dinosaur. It's the one that spits. And I'm sure that narrows it down.
Velociraptor?
No. Well, I guess velociraptors technically could spit, but it's like the poison spit one.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean. Anyway. I don't know exactly but yeah.
I'll go wake up Luke. He'll tell me in a second. so I'm like, I know the game now. I'll kind of do a little circle strafe. I'll kite it back and just try to, get in hits without dying. It kills me again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, well, shit. Okay. This time I'm going to try to run away from the dinosaur. Now I know it's up. And again, these are minutes into the game, not even, having established myself in any way. So I go running in the opposite direction. I'm like, I'm just going to go farm over here, get myself some resources and some levels before I worry. Oh, hey, there's another dinosaur that saw me that I did not know was there, and it's killed me now. So that's three times. Fourth time, just trying to get back to the gear I'd gotten up from the second run. I was killed by the dinosaurs again. This time there were two of them. So
this isn't at that point. This isn't survival like Minecraft. This is survival like baby turtles trying to make it to the water.
Yes. And God, like I love me a difficult game, but I did not.
You want a chance
for these dinosaurs? Yeah, I want a chance. And like, the first one's on me. I saw a small dinosaur. I thought small equals easy. And I learned my lesson, like stay away from the dinosaurs, but they come after you. And I'm on a little like beach peninsula that there's not a lot of options to get away from them. So that was the point where I realized that maybe Ark isn't for me. However, go ahead.
This sounds like a game that you'd want to watch like a Twitch streamer play first to see like how to actually play it correctly.
Yeah. What I understand is that there's like persistent servers that are all built up, and there's like a multiplayer aspect where I don't know if it's antagonistic or co-op or probably both. But people have like truly built up civilizations, and it's all about hunting the most dangerous dinosaurs you can find. So there's a lot of game there that I just couldn't get to, and I don't think it's because I was incompetent, though maybe. But yeah, it's just that it was the wrong kind of difficulty for me. However, that did allow me to fully experience the character creator.
Oh, geez. Okay.
Where I was able to just hit random. I was just like, ah, screw it. I'm checking it out. I'm not here for character creation. I'm just going to hit random. And these are the gems that I got turned out by hitting the random button. You guys, if you're going to have a randomization option, at least put some kind of limits to keep normal proportions. I know this is an audio medium, so this is terrible, but these are like the worst disfigured Stretch Armstrongs.
These look like muscle awesome. Figurines.
They are pretty wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah. The legs, boy.
Yeah, everyone is super duper jacked. It's just they are narrower and wider in all the places. Like you make a fat person and it's just a jacked person that's had their midsection stretched. that's how that works in the world of Ark. So I got my fair share of amusement out of that. Also, everyone has like the super wide soldier jaw.
Yeah.
How is it that this first dude, his calves are bigger than his thighs? What is going on?
That's what happens when you miss half of leg day.
No.
Oh my god.
This guy is basically like if you took Mega Man and did like an ultra realistic like rendering of him, this is probably
he
would be.
Oh man, right? Yeah. Oh Oh, Lord.
Wow. Oh, no. And I guess, let me see here. I think it's number three. I'll post these to the Level Slack channel and up on Facebook too, if I think
of it. Boy, three is something, all right.
Yeah, number three is what Humpty Dumpty looks like as a super realistic.
Right?
Rendering.
Yeah. A lot of very squat torsos and like his hips, I guess. Yeah, like the shell.
He's
like
got some childbearing hips.
Yeah, he's got childbearing hips, but like with a very narrow waist. It's kind of like he's. It's a little bit he's a walking like drink table. He's got a shelf going around his waist is the thing.
He's got a corset on. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like super.
I think it's what number three would look like if his biceps were a little smaller. I think that's all it is.
Yeah, both of them.
Okay, everyone listening has turned us off at this point. I'm so sorry.
I don't even know.
It is there is no kind of fencing or keeping proportions even relatively. It is literally every slider goes to one side or the other.
Yeah.
That's great.
And there's no filtering to that. So that is the one value I got out of Ark was the character. if someone knows how to make this game work, I got as far as pickaxe and death.
Yeah.
Tell me what I'm doing wrong. Maybe I'll come back to it.
Yeah, that sounds like a nightmare.
Ark, I think you guys got literally every single moment of that game played out. You've got it there.
Yeah,
to level up once just by surviving in the early game before I got killed each time. So apparently you just level up for surviving.
Yeah. I don't necessarily have any questions. I mean, this is a game that kind of is almost always on sale or, you know, on some kind of giveaway. And it just, for some reason, it has always been below my notice. Not below, but I've always looked past it.
Yeah. Well, I can't say you're missing much. The one other thing that got me is for I think two or three of the spawns, there was this big shiny beacon thing. Over just a little ways off, and I would get to it, and then there was no evident way to interact with it unless you were higher level. And that's probably what got me lured in and killed by the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
But you know, if you're going to place a gigantic shiny beacon for me to run towards, don't gate me off from it.
Right. Especially if there's not something else that says, hey, run this way. Yeah.
The dinosaurs were a pretty strong run, at least away cue. I followed it as well as I could, but they are faster.
Yeah.
So that's Ark.
Okay.
I got two quick hits. I finished XCOM Chimera Squad. Ooh. Satisfied with the end of the game, although there was no resetting of the difficulty curve. The final boss fight, the poor boss, just I had amassed so many different stuns and debuffs and everything. He got to move once in the entire encounter. Didn't even get to attack because he moved next to one of my operatives that has a reaction like attack for anyone that gets close to
him. Right, right.
So he spent the entire time frozen, hurting, stunned, and then dead.
After yeah. So I guess it's pretty good that it didn't like jump like buck the difficulty way up at the end, you know, like the fact that it was as easy as it was for you the whole way through kind of speaks like, okay, like, yeah, this is actually like tuned in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, XCOM has always had that point of at a certain point, you just turn into a murder god squad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, there's no stopping you. That feels great to get to. It didn't quite feel earned this time around, but overall, like I've said in previous weeks, the game does a great job on capitalizing on all the opportunities created by the turn format change.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like a really well explored, if quirky idea. And, I'm ending on a positive note with it. Enjoyed my time with it. Cool. So that's XCOM. You guys have heard a ton about that. Oh, go ahead.
Throughout the game, did you hit any bugs like as you progress further through the game?
Yeah. And I thought I screen captured it, and then for some reason it just didn't go through. So you know, you're always almost always indoors. Like you're more of a PD SWAT team, and so you're going through apartment complexes and storefronts and stuff like that. And occasionally it would just decide to show the roof.
and you would not be able to see through the roof. And it's like, I don't know why the roof is there in the first place. There's literally no scenario in which I want to be able to see the roof, but there is a very well modeled and rendered roof.
Cool.
That will sometimes, you know, 99% of the time it is invisible. And then it just popped in on commissions. Yeah. Like, I guess I'll go by outlines, I guess. or zoom in so far that that you can, you know, the camera goes under the roof, in which case you really have to scroll around to get a look at things.
Yeah,
that was the one big one. I had a crash or two, and otherwise it was pretty polished, at least by XCOM standards. that's funny phrase. I think it is probably built heavily on the engine that XCOM 2 refined.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably standing on the shoulders of giants in terms of getting away from bugs.
Right.
Continue to play Shadow of War. That's fun. My one story from Shadow of War is I found a orc follower who enrages when he takes damage.
Okay.
Which raging is usually saved for kind of edge conditions, like, oh, if he's set on fire, he'll get enraged, or if he sees a captain killed, he'll get enraged. This is literally like anytime you take damage, you rage, which makes them stronger. They, you know, their weaknesses stop having effect, so it's a big buff.
Mm-hmm.
So found that guy, and used him to go after the warlord, who is like on, you know, he's the you know, master of the entire area, who had a bodyguard that fled or was terrified by rage. And again, rage is supposed to be an edge case thing. Like, you're not supposed to see rage
right all
the time. But it was perfect because when you know, I show up to the fight, I install my rage guy as a lieutenant to this warlord and his other bodyguard. My guy rages at the start of the fight when he betrays the warlord. The bodyguard freaks out and is instantly broken, which means I can dominate him and turn him into my minion.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly it's a 3v1 in the opposite direction. And that was just a really fun moment of feeling like I understood the system and was able to play everything against itself perfectly.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, it was fun. And all these kind of random stats and abilities and stuff like that, sometimes they come together in really interesting ways.
Hmm.
So that's Shadow of War.
Very cool.
And yeah, then the final one, driven by Luke and Milo, is Minecraft Dungeons. And I know David's been playing this one, so I'll take his place on it this week.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning of this week, Luke and Milo got it in their heads that they wanted Minecraft Dungeons, and they're like, we'll pay for it, we'll buy it. Like,
hi, you're 4 and 5 years old.
Exactly. Right. We're like, what do you want to do? I'll pay you for, we were very intentional choosing chores that aren't their everyday chores.
Right. Right.
Give them like extra special stuff and let them quote unquote earn money. And then, so I think it's a $20 game and they got to like 17 or something. And I was like, you know, you guys were so good. I had already bought the game and had downloaded it and everything because mm-hmm. I didn't want them to have to wait. I was like, let me go see if Sony will give us a discount. And so I took it was all paper money and coins. Like, here, you give me that, I'll go upstairs and you know, set that in a drawer. And then came back down and had my phone. I was like, hey, they said they were going to give us a discount because you guys are so good. Here it is. And we jumped in.
Aw, that's so cute.
Yeah, they were ecstatic. And it's been a ton of fun. Jen and I are playing it co-op, so two players, and it is, as David has described, just kind of a very good Diablo light kind of game that is completely kid friendly in every way, shape, and form. Although it is still fairly difficult. Like, there are levels that we've bounced off of. I think the next to last level took us 4 or 5 tries, something like that. And that is within the level. You get 3 kind of resets if everyone on your team dies. So it is generous and still very difficult, but never to the point of frustration.
Hmm.
Although, you know, you'll hear what I said, the next last level, we are already on the last level after having it for 4 days.
That's meant to be circled through several times.
Yeah. So there's difficulty levels stepping up, but even then, like, it was startling. I think there's like 10 total levels or something. So
yeah,
We blew through it way faster than I expected. Mm-hmm. We'll see how much the upper difficulty levels extend things. They are locked until you beat the game on a normal level, so you couldn't just like jump to hard. But we certainly like that. That's not to denigrate the game. We've gotten our enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's been great family time. And it's on more than one night, it's caused the boys to get to stay up past bedtime because mommy and daddy are strategizing about which build we should go for and who's going to play what role. And well, you just got that legendary Warhammer, so maybe you should go melee. You've been sitting on that.
Wait. So your kids did extra chores to buy you and Jen a video game.
That's really yeah. good.
You're winning at parenting right now.
Yeah, right here. And they, well, it's funny because I offered to them. I was like, you want to play it? You know, you have to push buttons. And he's like, no, I just want to watch. So but the great thing is we'll have it for you know, time to come. And as he grows into it, we'll be able to go back.
Nice.
But yeah, they are really enjoying watching it, and we are really enjoying playing it.
Okay.
For many of the reasons that David has talked about already, it's a small but really well polished game that uses Minecraft well and kind of knows exactly what it wants to be in terms of family friendly Diablo and executes that perfectly.
Yeah, I want to get to Ben and what he's been playing, but here's my question: how did two pre-reading kids possibly who have not been around there, who have not been like hanging out with friends at school, how do they learn about a new game enough to beg you for it?
That's great. I literally was scrolling through the PlayStation store.
Oh, okay.
Instant recognizability.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's right of Minecraft. You know, what's that? And then they had it. So
you convinced the kids to do extra chores to buy you a video game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
It's good stuff.
Nice.
And that's me.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
All right. I got the hits. I got the usual Deep Rock Galactic, Rocket League, Slay the Spire, Magic the Gathering. I've continued playing Pit Cross. Not going to talk about those. So, like, you know, like how they sometimes do academic articles about experiments that fail, but they still publish them anyway as like a lesson in that direction.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still data.
But science is how science is supposed to work.
Yeah. So that's going to be like my game review for today is I bought a game called The Pillar, which was supposed to be a good puzzle game, kind of in the same vein as The Witness. And I played it for about 2 hours, and it was pretty miserable, and I stopped, and I don't think I'm going to come back to it.
Oh, no.
What happened?
Yeah.
So this came out. It's a relatively new game. It came out, like, within the last week. It was made in Unity. It's, as I said, it's very similar to The Witness. There's, like, panel puzzles. You walk around. The only difference is it kind of transports you, like, world to world, and each one kind of has its own focus. The downside is that there's like no real development in the puzzles. It feels almost like randomly generated. Mm-hmm. They have four different puzzle types and they're all like grid-based similar to The Witness. But there's like different ones. One's like a memory puzzle where it'll show you a pattern and you have to redo it. Oof. But like, it'll show you like a path to draw and then you have to draw it, you know?
That's not like deduction-based though. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, by itself, it's not an interesting puzzle mechanic. And the way that they like artificially do difficulty in that is they just show the pattern very quickly and it's more complicated as time goes on. And it's like, oh, this is a chore. This is not a video game.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a bummer. But this was actually recommended on John Blow's channel by people who were there, not him, but like other listeners as like, oh, this is a really good puzzle game that just came out. But it is not a good puzzle game that just came out. It is a game that just came out. Yeah. Anyway,
I just uploaded like a screenshot of like it's 2 out of 5 review that I pulled up. So wow.
Is it impressive that this is running on an Android? Like it seems to be the same kind of walk around a world thing that The Witness does. Does it at least have technical prowess going for it? Reaching,
no.
reaching, reaching?
No. Yeah. It's really a bummer because it's a walking game, kind of like The Witness, except they don't have like a run button. So you are it's like the second level of Mission Impossible for N64, where you are stuck at walking speed and you cannot change that. But on top of that, there's a couple puzzles where it's like you have to, like, literally the puzzle is you have to walk to like two or three different points on the map, and it's like an ordering problem. So you have to do a lot of double backing. And it's like, okay, you're specifically exploiting a problem with the mechanic right now with this puzzle. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
This literally has like the orange tree motif that is so iconic.
This looks actionable.
Yeah,
that's like another thing too. Well, and I think that's might be in part of why it was suggested to play on John Blow's stream.
Right.
Was that so close to The Witness? It's different enough, I guess, but it
still feels like something like a trauma film that is designed specifically to trick grandparents who are going out to buy the popular movie for their kids. Yeah. And they get the knockoff. It feels deceptive to me.
it is certainly far enough away in quality.
Yeah.
That you do not want to play it. Like there's another thing that was like really bad with it too, where it's like every time you complete a puzzle, it like gives like a ding sound effect similar to like a mobile game. And then it'll take control away from the game, and it'll have this camera cut over to this meter that'll like increment by one and then cut back. And it just like, so it's like, it takes like 5 to 10 seconds out of your gameplay to show you that something's incrementing that you already know is incrementing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
can I read to you a little bit from a Steam review?
Please.
By a user called Vanta Claus. They played for 3 hours. They got this. Oh wait, no, it was 1 hour at review time. They received the game for free. This was posted on Friday. At first glance, the dev, all in caps, is definitely inspired by The Witness. So I just, at first glance, is very funny to me. I don't want to take too many shots at somebody who is typing, although there might be a little bit of an explanation for their compromised typing, because of the last paragraph, with a cup of weed tea and some psychedelic chillaxing music, this game is absolutely enjoyable. Not sure if I will count this game as a gem, but it's getting very close. I just need to play more of it.
Yeah.
So
anyway,
at first glance.
So all of this is kind of parallel with, I'm playing through the game The Witness with a friend right now and watching them play it for the first time.
Okay.
And like, that game is so well designed, so well made. I know I've heaped praises on it before, and I'll probably continue to do so. But yeah, it's really fun to watch somebody play through that game.
Yeah.
And like, the puzzles are so well designed in that game. And like, I don't know, anymore after seeing that, it's like, it's amazing that they made it in 7 years and not longer.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just a triumph in teaching you how to reach great heights with the puzzles. Yeah, bringing you along to match it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So you would not recommend that somebody spend $15 on the pillar.
Please do not do that.
Okay.
$15? You skipped that part.
Yeah. No, I'm looking at it on Steam. It's currently on sale for 10% off, so a cool $13.49.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Anything over 10 is more than what I usually pay for a game I'm not so sure about.
Oh, man. Do you have anything else, Ben?
That's it. Okay. I'm still eagerly awaiting Last of Us 2 that comes out this Friday.
Yeah, that it does. I need to pre-order that so I can just swing by and grab it before. I don't want to walk into a store. I am completely broken by curbside pickup now. Curse me if ever I walk into a Best Buy again.
So is it the desire to have a physical copy in your hands that keeps you from just going straight digital?
Just with how big that one is, my internet is bad enough that I don't want to try and force my PS4 to choke down all 100 gigs of it or whatever. So
I don't want to be doing that all day.
Right.
So on that note, I think you can download it Thursday night.
It still wouldn't be enough. So, yeah.
All right.
Yep. So I've got some. I'm going to go kind of real quick through them. So this past weekend, I streamed a game that I played a little bit of before. This is Layers of Fear 2. Okay. This is by a studio that I enjoy, although this kind of didn't rise to my appreciation for Layers of Fear 1 or their other game, Observer, which I think is my favorite of the lot. So Layers of Fear 2, Mark Up, another horror game that takes place on a boat. You are an actor who is getting ready to shoot a film on a boat, but you are kind of pulled into this nightmare world where you are kind of going through these horrible, hellish situations with the idea that there's this director who is trying to help you build the character. You know, the idea being you get rid of everything that is you and all that is left is the character. And of course, there are reveals about who you are and what you do as you go along. But like the original Layers of Fear, which took place in a mansion, it is mostly about navigating an illogical space. It doesn't do as many inventive and disorienting things with the nature of space. There are some little freakouts where you go and like open a door and walk in, and it turns out you're walking into the same room that you just left, like that kind of stuff. But it is not as baroque or intricate as Layers of Fear 1. And the visuals, while very good, are not as kind of mind-breaking as Observer, the cyberpunk game, where you're kind of like going into the mental implants of people who are dead or dying. That's the one where Rutger Hauer did the main voice for the character. So it was very Blade Runner-y. So like I had fun with Layers of Fear 2, but it was kind of just a fun walk as opposed to anything. There's some mechanics, like there's a little bit of pursuit, Amnesia or whatever, but those sections are very short. Pretty well defined. There are some areas where you're trying to avoid like searchlights and stuff, but it's pretty basic stealth kind of things. Any of kind of the nods toward towards a little bit more mechanical intricacy didn't necessarily rise, and in fact sometimes they got in the way because I found myself being a little bit stuck trying to figure out what I needed to do next. It was not necessarily signaled as well as it possibly could have been. It sounds like I'm down on it. I think that like it's worth your attention if you want like a fun 5-hour game that's full of some cool visuals and stuff, but like no one element of it stood out enough to like make up for kind of how middling everything was, Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nothing tasted bad, but it was all just kind of bland and mushed together.
It wouldn't be the first game that I would point you toward if you were looking for like a fun, short walking sim horror game. I think would be the way that I put it out. I wouldn't steer you away from it, but there are others that might be more worth your while.
Does one come to mind that does specifically the spatial distortion kind of stuff better?
Layers of Fear 1 better than this one for sure.
Okay, just take a step back.
Yeah, cool. Yep. So Ben, I think maybe you popped in a little bit on the stream. Jala, I saw you toward the beginning. Did you have questions about what you saw?
No, I was not in a good place, and I wandered off, and that's the end of that. And then you didn't see me again. So it sounds like I wasn't really missing anything though. So cool.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
Same boat. I was only there for a minute, if that, and then I watch protests on Twitch, so sorry.
There's more important stuff going on than me playing a 7 out of 10 horror game on a stream. The other game that I've been playing playing for Watch Out for Fireballs, the Castlevania game Order of Ecclesia has given me a little bit of a Castlevania bug. So I have fired up Castlevania Aria of Sorrow. This is a 2003 Game Boy Advance Castlevania game that is kind of like the one of those games on Game Boy Advance that like started heading toward what those would eventually be, kind of the more intricate, more intricate game, more similar to Symphony of the Night. You have a gigantic castle that you, you know, have access to. You have powers that are rapidly expanding, as opposed to some of the earlier Game Boy Advance Castlevanias where it was a little bit more limited. And I'm like having a really good time. So like in my head, I had built this game up like this was like for a little bit, this was my favorite game. Like really? back in the early 2000s, it was like, oh my God, the Game Boy Advance is the best system. And like, it has this on here because this is everything that I need. It's a little strange to go back to it and see how basic it is and see how short it is, but like everything is really, really sound and solid. And like, you can see where they would eventually go with Dawn of Sorrow, Portrait of Ruin, and Order of Ecclesia, on the DS kind of versions. So like, I feel like I jumped back like to just the right point to start like getting a little bit of that feeling again, you know, from these portable Castlevania games, you know, because if you go back much further, you kind of end up on, you know, in the Castlevania collection with like the, you know, NES and SNES games, which are a little bit like just they're just categorically a different kind of game. And there's not really much you can do kind of afterwards, but like Aria of Sorrow is a really good game. And my only real complaint about it is that they introduce a system where your special powers that you get, are gathered by killing enemies and taking their soul. And those are random drops. So if you want a particular skill, every enemy drops something. Sometimes, though, you may have to kill enemies a bunch of times in order to get it. Like, that's the only, like, mark I can hold up against it. But, like, I don't know. If you have, you know, a ROM cart or a flash cart, or if you have, you know, an emulator and you want to fire up, like, an old Castlevania game, you can do way worse than Aria of Sorrow on the Game Boy Advance.
Mm. Yeah, I'm really happy you went back to it and weren't like, oh, what was I thinking? Mm-hmm. So it was easy to make me happy back then.
No, it's like it's good and solid and the music slaps, which is what I can say about the vast majority of the Castlevania series, which I'm realizing is one of my favorite series of games. So that's a nice thing.
You're in good company.
Yeah, that is a nice thing to realize. Like, oh, shit, I really, really like these games a lot. So. That has been fun. A fun trip down memory lane. And also it's like super short. I played it for like 4 hours and I'm like 60% of the way through. So that's the way it ought to be.
That's definitely nice sometimes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So
the things we would mourn in games, back then, it's now as adult, it's like, oh, that's kind of nice.
Yeah. Short game? Yes, please. I don't remember being disappointed with it because like back in the day, like I, you know, I wanted to 100% it or get as close as I could. So there was stuff there for me, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'll see how I go. I'm mostly distracted by playing Tactics Ogre for Watch Out Fireballs right now. But I will continue, dipping back into those as I can. Any questions about Castlevania Aria of Sorrow?
No, glad you enjoyed it.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Jala, you put this one up. What is the question that you ask nice people?
I asked, what video game vehicle would you own and why?
And we got a ton of responses on this, so why don't we get started? I'll read with Paul, who says, since I like riding motorcycles in real life, I would go with the Tron Light Cycle. Of course, in the real world, the light trails wouldn't necessarily crash people passing through them. Plus, driving around Austin is a bit like the cycle stage in Tron, trying desperately to avoid crashing while knowing you inevitably will. Some of the most terrified I've ever been has been driving in Austin.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not just because it was the South by crowd there, right?
No. We were there like, what was it, Jala? It was like October or something like that. No, it was like July, August.
It was hot. I remember that.
It was incredible. It was incredibly hot. Yeah. I remember driving back south from that vegan restaurant that we went to. That was really good. I loved the enchilada that I got there. And like there was just like somebody who was like swerving and honking in front of me, and we were in bumper to bumper, and I was just sweating bullets.
How are you swerving? You're not moving.
Yeah. It was really bad. So I don't know that I would put my life on the line by riding a Tron light cycle in Austin, but that is a fun idea. I like those light cycles. Yeah. Let's see, Dennis, what does Tyler say?
Tyler says, I've always been fascinated with the concept of airships. I loved playing Final Fantasy III on DS and getting not one, but two airships, especially the second, which let you chill under the deck and shop. So probably that airship, even though I'm probably just asking for a magic boat blimp.
Absolutely. At least with that one, with Final Fantasy III on the DS.
I mean, one could do worse than a magic boat blimp.
No, you can do better, but can't do worse, you know? Yeah. No, you could do worse, but you can't do better. There we go. I didn't mean to take a shit on the blimp. Yeah. Apologies. Yeah, most of the airships are big blimps. They're not just big, 18th century galleons that have propellers on them. Yeah.
Blimp is a fun word.
Blimp is good. Dirigible, fun, but in a different way. Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Christopher say?
Christopher says, let's see, I'm currently playing The Outer Worlds, but I haven't taken off in my ship yet, so I can't say that. Yeah. And I'm certainly not going to pick the garbage jet ski in Uncharted 1. So I'll just go with the good old reliable Normandy from Mass Effect. I just want to fly around space, chatting with my space buddies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, that is a deep cut on the jet ski, but some very well earned shade for the jet ski.
So, okay, can you give me can you give me like a brief on why the jet ski is funny?
It is. I didn't know you could screw up handling that bad in a game.
Okay,
like, I think they're trying to do stuff with being able to like seamlessly maneuver and aim, and it all just runs together. Where what should feel like this awesome chase sequence on a jet ski is more like, God damn it, how do I get out of this corner?
Okay,
it's probably a lot more realistic to how I would wind up on a jet ski if I was being chased.
I've ridden a jet ski, and I was like a shitty teen, and I pretty much got the hang of it right away. So I think that maybe it's a little bit more intuitive than you're thinking.
Can I share a jet ski story real quick?
You can.
All right. So all I learned about driving on jet skis was from the end of Resident Evil 4.
Okay.
And so when I got out on a jet ski with my brother, I tried to do like a 180 like Leon does.
Oh no. Oh boy.
We fell right off really quickly. Well,
did you try it again? Did you flip it, or like did you just get thrown off? Okay,
we just got thrown off. Yeah.
Okay.
Who knew Resident Evil wouldn't be accurate?
I know. I grew up that day.
Shit. Yeah. Man, I have thought about how fun it would be to be on a jet ski right now. Just go over to the reservoir, ride it around. Oh man, I miss being on a boat. I had a lot of fun on a boat as a kid. Anyway, that jet ski is not good from there. So
any,
like,
any jet ski, but an Uncharted jet ski.
Yes, yeah. Let's see here. Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, there are a ton of cool vehicles I could pick from, so I'll just go with what comes to mind first. The old arcade game Spy Hunter has you using a James Bond-style fancy car with machine guns on the front, oil slick and smoke injectors on the back, and missiles on the roof. It's all contained also, so no one would know. I could drive around in style in a great car and get all kinds of praise and good attention, and when someone is being an asshole on the road, I could pop out the guns and take care of them. Win-win.
Hey, are you from Austin?
Hey, Greg, what you're talking about will kill people.
Well, we didn't say where he has the car. Maybe he's in the game.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, we already discussed how you don't shame people for killing people in a game. So,
right. Like, okay. Yeah. But I mean, the question is like, which one, like if you could have one, I guess it doesn't say. It doesn't say in real life, so yeah, no. You worked us into an Air Bud corner, okay?
Yeah.
The original one had the car turn into a boat, right?
In Spy Hunter?
Yeah.
I've not played enough of it to know.
Okay. I know like the later remakes and stuff have that. Mm. I thought the original game had, if you got far enough, eventually you'd have like a water level as a boat. Mm. But maybe I'm misremembering that.
Did they? So I know at one point they were going to be making a Spy Hunter film starring The Rock.
Well,
yeah. But I'm seeing that didn't happen. Yeah. Okay. They must have canceled it.
That is a very young looking The Rock.
He's been around forever. Yeah. That's the thing about The Rock.
Oh man.
One thing you got to know about The Rock. let's see here. David writes, the Enterprise from Final Fantasy IV, a sweet airship that can come to me via remote control. Bonus points if it comes with the hovercraft attached, so I can go cruising on the water if I so desire. Well, of course it has the hovercraft attached. Come on. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would just be the Falcon. Yeah.
So there.
let's see here. Dennis, what does Dan say?
Dan says, the tiny model car from GTA 1. I get to zip around listening to awesome radio stations. For some reason, it had a truck horn that would scare the hell out of people. And if things in this world get too depressingly real, I can ride it off a cliff as it explodes, going out in style.
Thumb on the wheezing it. Making a statement. Although, please seek help if you do think about doing that in real life. That's pretty scary. was there the tiny model car in GTA 1? I thought that was more of a San Andreas thing.
I don't remember.
You know what? I'm thinking of GTA 3. So GTA 1, I've not played an awful lot of that. So
I'm not seeing screenshots of it, but I believe it exists.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the extra loud horn sounds good. Ben, what does Martinus say?
Martinus Carlson says the Epic or Wings of Time from Chrono Trigger would be sweet. Not the prettiest of vehicles, but being able to travel in time is pretty neat.
That feels
true.
Yeah, no, you got us. We didn't say it couldn't travel through time. All these others could travel through space.
It didn't say that. It just said
airbag rules.
We need to put more guardrails on these things. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Epoch is good. Yeah. Jella, what does Callum say?
Callum says the Ragnarok from Final Fantasy VIII is the first thing that popped into my head. Is easy enough to fly that people with zero training got it back into atmosphere and seems to be a secret mecha.
It is. Yeah, and it can survive the time crush. Yeah.
I like that we've got three different Final Fantasies in here.
People go to bat for that series.
No, I think it's the airship effect in general.
Possibly, yeah. We got the Normandy too, and that might as well just be another Final Fantasy airship.
I mean, there's no air in space, so not technically.
Well, there's an air and space museum, so...
Damn it!
Well, the question doesn't say.
Oh, fuck! We need to bring the show to an end before more of that happens. And I'll round us out here with Rookie. Rookie, who says very few multiplayer questions have a quote right answer, but I believe this one might. The jet bike from GTA Online is the perfect vehicle. The only downside is the increased chance of horrific death. Hey, Rookie, that's the downside of most vehicles, actually. Rookie continues, but considering how 2020 has been going so far, that might be a plus. Grim. So
yeah, you know, okay, let me just take a minute and say I did not understand when I was writing this question about fun vehicles and video games that we would have multiple people talking about riding off of cliffs or horrific death in a vehicle. Yeah. As a result of this, I was not thinking that when I was
no like, no well, it's right. That wasn't the behavior no. We're encouraging.
Yeah. No, please do not.
Yeah, people should feel comfortable expressing themselves, but also,
yes,
hey,
yes,
we
yes,
hope
yes.
You feel better. It's worth it, buddy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is hard. I think I'm just going to go with mine. Let's do the Dune buggy from Half-Life 2.
All right.
Yay.
Just fun. Oh, like, I don't know. Yeah. You know, if we're taking in the law, I think that... you know, anything that goes on the road might be a little bit of a problem. I don't necessarily want the Normandy because I don't know what I would do in space. I barely know what to do in the quarter acre that I own. And a quarter acre, I don't know if you know how small that is, but
you like, I know that you definitely want to put some nails up so those little birds won't come back and make a nest, Ice Princess.
I want to put them up so they're not nesting so near my house. I want to put a platform so they can nest in the goddamn trees like God fucking intended.
Jala, let it go. Let it go. Okay.
Never. Okay.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. No, but yeah, like a cool dune buggy that has a gas cannon on top of it, not for shooting at people or other cars, but for clearing debris or a pathway. Yeah. No, I could. Okay. I could go with that. Dennis, I'll let you.
Yeah, you ready for me to airbud the rules again?
I encourage it.
I'm gonna go with an actual car because what pops into my head was this sick Lotus Elise from Midnight Club 3.
Ooh, okay.
Created for myself on Midnight Club 2, or excuse me, Midnight Club 3.
Okay.
On the PS2.
Awesome.
Yeah, Midnight Club 2 on the PS3 or Midnight Club 3 on the PS2. It all comes out in the wash. Anyway,
yeah.
It's one of those. I think Midnight Club 3 was the first racing game that I got deep into, and mm-hmm. I spent embarrassing amount of time customizing cars in that, and the Lotus Elise was my like prized possession. Orange, relatively understated racing stripe, nothing mm-hmm. nothing fancy, and loved it to pieces, and then found out that the Lotus Elise is a fairly achievable vehicle. For a small amount of time, as I was at peak Midnight Club, I was, you know, looking up stuff online and making plans for saving and all that stuff.
This looks like, speaking of GTA cars, this was looks like what the Banshee was based off of from those.
I believe that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a sweet little car. Uh-huh. I'd love to roll around in that. So here we go. I'm pulling real life cars at you.
Where would you drive that? Like, would you rent a course to take that out on?
Yeah, I think that would be fun. I think it occupies that sweet spot, at least in my mind, where it's something you could take to a course and you know, feel badass and feel like you've got something that is meant for the course, mm-hmm. and at the same time you're not agonizing about taking it out on a date.
Gotcha. You know? Yeah.
So it's not quite high enough up the ladder to be a in the garage or on the track car.
Right.
At least in my mind.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the one of the Wikipedia ones. The Wikipedia image for Series 1 is an orange one, and that is not an ugly vehicle. That is looks pretty cool to me. Yeah, this is awakening car feelings that I don't ever really have. So I'm going to close that tab.
I could tell you about how after playing Midnight Club, I would drive around and just look for any car that had some kind of kit on it. I wonder if that's a kit. That's probably a kit.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That like 50% of cars had aftermarket bodywork on them or something.
Yeah. I mean, like if you know the right place to go, I just on a Friday night, I could take you someplace even here out here in Mansfield where people have kits out.
Good Lord, my corporate job at P&G had a car show.
Oh, wow.
Where just all the randos at the office would one day a year bring out their, I mean, it was an awesome cadre of vehicles, but there are car people everywhere.
Huh.
Well, not so much in this thread. I don't know if anyone's listed an actual car.
No,
I don't think so.
No, I think anybody.
Oh, actually, Greg did. Greg said that.
This is true.
Yeah, Greg had the car.
Yeah. This is just, James Bond supercar.
Nicole was trying to be like, no, you can't. You'll kill people.
No kidding. Like the oil's like, oh my God, think about the, like a school bus could be behind you, man.
And the environmental damage, Greg.
Yeah. Anyway. So many birds' eggs that won't hatch.
I know birds. Think of the birds.
Think of the birds, Greg. Ben, how about you?
So I'm going to add to the Final Fantasy answers and say the ship that you get in Final Fantasy X, which I had to look up, is called the Fahrenheit.
Okay.
Maybe.
Hmm. The airship that's that you have?
One. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
You named one of two airships in the main series that you can't actually fly.
Aw.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm doing it for nostalgic reasons, so...
I got
That's okay. He can have it. It doesn't mean anything one way or the other.
Right. No, it'll get him where he wants to go in the world. Yeah. And it looks like he wants an airship to look like. Yeah.
Fancy.
A-okay, yeah. Fine.
Man, I did not know that this airship was going to conjure this memory. But mm-hmm. This is my strongest memory from Final Fantasy X, looking at the Fahrenheit, as it's apparently called, is at some point you're on the airship and you get like visited by the ghost of your father or your pastor, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a Blitzball mini game where like you got to do a super sweet game saving kick or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember like a 5-minute tutorial on how this mini game works. I fucked it up on the first try and never saw it again.
Yep. Yeah, and that's like that is something that you need to get a legendary weapon or something.
Yeah, ultimate weapon.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if there was any way to get it back. I have to imagine there wasn't.
Reload a save.
I was not smart enough to keep good save hygiene at that point in my life.
Well, also there was nothing to say like, oh yeah, this is important. So
yeah,
but that was PS2 era Final Fantasy for you.
Who knew that was the thing that would bring up trauma in all this conversation?
Jala, how about you?
Mine is actually the image for the multiplayer question. Ooh. The Char Lion Head tank from Guild Wars 2, because it's badass. I don't even want to do anything with all the guns on it. I just want to drive it around, because look at it. It's badass. It looks like a giant lion head. I mean, it's cool. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, so is that person there to scale? Is that an especially tiny person? Okay. That's to scale. No, okay.
That's a regular human. So.
Huh. Yeah. You just want to roll up over like trees and cars and people and stuff with those treads.
I don't want to wreck the trees. I just want to
roll over. There might be baby birds in there, Jala.
There could be birds, and we don't want that. Nah. I will go over some rocks and stuff.
Right.
I don't think you'll be able to help but wreck a couple trees. Like, even with best of intentions, if you're in this vehicle, you're going to wreck some trees.
You could ride it on a highway.
Where you are. You could be on a highway or like Dave lives in the desert. There's nothing out there. You could go in the desert and go do wheelies or something. Mm-hmm. It's fine.
There are not trees in the desert. I can attest to that.
So there.
So there.
Yeah.
So there.
Yeah. Well, thanks everybody for responding. This has been a lot of fun. If you would like to participate, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Still keeping my ear to the ground and open about alternatives for how to handle the multiplayer. But as of right now, going to keep it on Facebook while I investigate some other things. I have not heard much since the past episode. Like I said, facebook.com/levelpodcast. Thank you, Jala, for putting it up.
Yeah.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are exciting us in the world of video games around us. So Jala and I, for me, I cannot ignore the thing that I am most excited about. And Jala, you brought this story as well. So I will throw it to you. Jala, what did we learn about the future of Resident Evil in the the PlayStation event that happened last week?
Yeah, so Resident Evil 8 is The Village, and I will admit I groaned real loudly internally originally when I first heard it's a village somewhere in Europe for the setting, but actually the trailer is damn good, so yeah. I'm actually excited to the point that it's going to be a pre-purchase or a day one purchase for me, which never happens, guys. I don't ever do that. So anyway, Ethan is the main character of this game, continuing on, because 7 is kind of like a reboot for the series, because as everybody should know by this point, Resident Evil 6 was so over the top that the only way they could have made anything after that, it would have been like in space, it's going to be like dead fate, and that's where that would go.
Right.
So anyway, they kind of had to do something to reset. That was 7. So, yeah, it's going to be a little bit more action exploration focused, which is great because I like action and exploration. So, for me, this looks like a nice, happy medium between action style and survival horror. So, therefore, like when I see this game, it's making me a lot more excited than I ever was for Resident Evil 7. Chris also returns in this game, and he actually looks like a natural progression of his Resident Evil 5 and 6 self. Mm-hmm. He must have been really sick in 7, because I don't know what happened to him in 7.
He was on a Pedialyte diet. It was real bad. Yeah,
he just like lost. He just lost all of his weight. I don't know what happened.
All of his mass. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah,
it's been funny to see people like post like collages of Chris's appearance throughout the years, as if Chris Redfield ever looked like anything but Guy Whitey Corngood.
I know, like, right?
You think it was Chris Redfield, like, the way, like, oh, he's changing so much.
Yeah.
Well, the only real difference is like the size of his muscles, how much of a beefcake is Chris.
Right,
and it's
right.
Like, I know a lot of people are talking about how Chris from 8 looks like Mr. X, you know, or that right. kind of a thing. But like, if you are somebody who works out with weights and lifts heavy, over mm-hmm. time, you do just get more massive until yep. you are just, you know, so like,
until you look like Tyrant. Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So he went Tyrant. It's fine. He can do that.
No judgment. Yeah.
It's all good. I mean, like before he did that, he could punch through older. So I mean, I'm not going to tell him no.
No.
So.
Yeah.
But it looks real good. There's werewolves, there's witches. I'm probably gonna get mad about the witches, because like I saw some esoteric symbols and shit, and you know, like that's one of my things. It's like
right. stuff. Are they gonna fuck up the specifics of it?
Yeah. Are they gonna make me mad about that? They probably are. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's Resident Evil. What am I gonna say? I mean, like they had like a what was it? Some kind of ziggurat from, you know, South America over in Africa for some reason.
Yeah.
Underground with Indiana Jones. Like I don't even know what they're doing half the time.
They didn't either with RE5. So
yeah, yeah.
Like I whatever.
Yeah. I'm excited about it too. I mean, like, so, you know, it is a trailer that I would recommend going back and watching several times. You know, my first go through, I just kind of got the general vibe of it. It ends in a really shocking way, with Chris, you know, maybe killing Ethan's wife. We'll see. Nobody who dies stays dead in this series anyway. So
it's true.
Who knows? You know, if you go back, like all of these quick cuts away, like you see like places where Resident Evil ass puzzles can happen, like, you know, doors that have bas reliefs on them with slots for you to put plates on. Like there's an umbrella symbol in the middle of like a puzzle looking kind of thing. Later on in the trailer, you get like images of what appears to be like a big ornate castle with some fancy looking ladies dressed up. So it looks like you're going to be, you know, chased around by some mutant ladies in Victorian garden.
Yeah, they vampires.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't see. I didn't read vampire into them, but I can believe that. Just like leaning generally into like a folk horror kind of thing. Like I don't know, I'm down with a folk horror. Bring me the Wicker Man. Bring me a whole whole flight of these folk horror tropes, please.
Have you seen Midsommar, Cole?
Oh God, yes, yeah.
All right, cool.
And then, like, what's with the Van Helsing dude?
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. But they also had that part. There was, like, an old guy, and there's, like, one of those standoff things, like how you have in Resident Evil 4, where you're, like, in a house, and the shit's coming in from outside, and you're trying to, like, barricade the doors and everything.
Yeah. So Gary and I will have a Duck Feed Presents talking about some of these trailers that have come up, but I would be remiss if I didn't say this is the thing that I'm most excited about right now. I have no idea when this is going to come out. I have not seen actual gameplay out of this. You know, it was part of the PS5 event, so one assumes that it's going to be on the PS5 whenever that comes out. So we're just kind of going to wait and see, but I'm jazzed. I'm on board.
Yeah.
Like what specifically took what specifically about the trailer took you from being like eye roll about the European village part and made you like, okay, I'm on board for this?
Everything about the way it was shot gives me that sensation of it, like the familiar kind of feeling of the survival horror elements from 7, but without like it being weird and in your face in quite the same way, but like also they cut in enough stuff that looks actiony and, you know, looks like, okay, these are spaces that you're going to definitely have to be, you know, going through, you know, and exploring, which is all kind of, you know, like what they're showing in the trailer is all the stuff that they're saying they're putting into the game, which is a nice, that's like exactly the kind of mix I want out of a Resident Evil game at this point.
They showed you the goods.
Yeah. They showed me exactly what I wanted to see for it. And like, you know, when it was like Village in Europe, I'm like, oh God, are they going to do that thing where like, you know, this is Spain, but not Spain. And all the little dudes are in the village and they're just like running around going mierda every 2 seconds. Right. It's like hilarious, you know, like, is it going to be that kind of bull or is it actually something else? And it looks like it, you know, like you say, there's like a lot of folk horror. It looks like they're definitely pulling from like, here's vampires and Dracula and like Helsing. Like, what the hell are they doing? I don't even know what they're doing anymore, but like, that's cool. I mean, like, it's a different direction. It's a different thing. It's a different kind of theming that they're going for. It's kind of like in Revelations, all of the monsters, I didn't really talk about what the monsters look like, but all the monsters in Revelations have like a nautical theme to them. They are all based on like deep sea fishes and other kinds of sea life. And so like it's like merged, partially human looking but also partially sea life looking kind of critters. So like I also like the fact that in Revelations, the critters aren't like the same goop monsters that you see in a lot of the other games.
Right.
So, yeah. But, yeah, so in the 8 trailer, it looks like they're kind of like leaning in another theming direction, which, you know, could work pretty well.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah. I'm jazzed that there seems to be like enemies, you know, like characters who are mutated who retain their sentience, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty great because that's the thing that I like about RE7 is you are dealing with, you know, Lucas and Jack and Marguerite, you know, with their different individual kind of things, you know, kind of like you're dealing with Salazar and you're dealing with Osmond.
Yeah. The Plagas.
Yeah. So it's good. I just I couldn't be more excited about it. Yeah, I'm stoked. I'll continue looking, but really the only information that I need right now is a release date. I'll be there. Same thing with like the Demon Souls remake. We don't know anything about that. They just put out a trailer that felt like a bunch of flavor. It's got a lot of people, you know, really like going off on speculation, which is always fun to watch because people are actually really creative with the reaches that they tend to make. But like, I don't know, it's enough for me that Demon Souls is going to be rescued off the PS3. So I'll take that as a win. Yeah. Cool. So let's see here. Dennis, what is the story that you brought?
Yeah, your new game is dumb. Let me tell you about the game you should be excited about.
A game that came out 3 years ago that was very good when it came out?
Yeah. No. Invisible Ink is coming to the Switch. And as we talked earlier on this episode about how delightful it is to have games available in a more portable format, Invisible Ink is a turn-based stealth puzzle roguelike kind of game and is absolutely going to be a perfect fit for the Switch. I saw this is coming out. I'm very excited. I could totally see myself rebuying it because I think I owned Invisible Ink on the PS3. I think it was that long ago. And I don't know if I have it again on the PS4. So getting it for the Switch might be perfect. But it is just a great little twist on the turn-based strategy formula. And the roguelike elements are done very well to where I could see it being the perfect game to always have in your metaphorical back pocket.
I saw a lot of people on Twitter who were really excited about this when it was announced pretty much by surprise.
Yeah, I think part of why I love this game so much is I knew literally nothing about it going in. And then it was like, hey, this is actually made for you.
It's always a good feeling.
It was a great discovery. Yeah. So glad to see. It seems like it's a game that really does have a kind of a cult following. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that cult following is expanded now that's available on the Switch.
Yeah. That's like a lot of games by Clay. Clay's a studio that inspires loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. And Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I was just going to see what you guys posted and then just pick something else from the PS5 announcement.
Okay.
So I'll go with Spider-Man. There's going to be a new Spider-Man game, and it centers on Miles Morales. And
yeah, I know. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, one of my biggest disappointments with Spider-Man for the PS4, which is a game that I really enjoyed, was that they introduced Miles and you do not get to play as him. So yeah, I'm super jazzed about this as well.
And playing the long con.
Yeah. Do you know anything about the play or what they're going to be adding? Because all I've...
I know nothing about it except for it's going to be released sometime this year.
Cool.
I think holiday season 2020.
Yeah. There was a little bit of back and forth about whether or not it's like an expansion or a standalone game, based on some like vagueness in the announcement. And then somebody from Sony saying it's going to be one thing and somebody from Insomniac saying it's going to be another. So I'm unclear about it. Regardless of what it is, I will be happy to get a hold of it and play it because Spider-Man for the PS4 is dope. It's really good.
And the Spider-Man themed PS5, I think was just a fan mock-up.
Yes.
Am I seeing that right? Because yeah. I was about to say, I know that this is the game I'll be playing because I want the dope-ass PS5. Unfortunately,
I know I'm the person who said dope initially, but I want us to reel that back by about 25% if we can.
It's in the water now. You can't get it out.
Yeah. No, I saw that was a fan mock-up to do let's do a pulse check. How do you guys feel about the visual design of the PS5?
I'll
put myself out. I like it. I like that it looks unique.
Mm-hmm. It's fine. I don't care. No. Like, I know there's a lot of people out there who are like freaking out. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a whatever.
Yeah.
Like every single, there was a tweet I saw that it posted a picture of like every single one of the PlayStations and what everybody complained about the design, because it's always something. Yeah. So, I mean, like it doesn't matter. I don't care.
Yeah.
It plays the thing, whatever.
Yeah. My only tweet about it was like, what if, you know, Frank Gehry designed a vagina, but I like both those things, Frank Gehry and vagina. So cool. Whatever.
You had mentioned the idea of wanting wood paneled, electronics as well. And saw one, I can't remember if I sent it to you or not, but yeah, there's a wood paneled PS5 mockup that is gorgeous.
I want it. Give it to me.
All these mock-ups. I want to see what the real thing is.
I'm thinking of a falling water coolant system in this now.
It's the faucet that pours onto the thing.
Especially compared to the PS4. This is way sleeker. And then I love that in what felt like a descent into just kind of PC-esque, you know, nothingness, like it just, the PS4 didn't really look distinct. It feels like PS5 has picked a direction, is kind of going with a bold design choice just trying to be as streamlined of an electronic as possible.
It's definitely a stark contrast to the Xbox One S or whatever it is, the you know, refrigerator, the pillar. The
Xbox One S B360 remastered. Or...
I have not been paying close enough attention to name it accurately. So
me neither.
Yeah.
So, and one thing we should talk about too is I think it's cool that they're offering a digital edition where it's like they're getting rid of the disc completely.
It's what they did with the PSP. Yeah.
I'm here for it. I'll get the digital edition.
Undecided.
Okay. Likewise, yeah.
Undecided. I know that the discs that I own are secondary anyway, but it's good to have options at the very least.
Yeah. You can lend your games to your friends if you have the actual disc.
Yeah. Yeah. How
I don't
do you
lend,
all...
I take.
Yeah, no, you inebriate and then steal from
But I guess that when then I would just wind up with a bunch of discs that I can't play.
Yeah, that's the thing, huh?
Yeah, it's true, Dennis.
Joke's on you.
Guys, I'm turning over a new leaf.
Only because you have no other option.
Yeah, this new leaf is he's going to get the disc PS5 now, so he can still steal games.
All right, how do you guys feel about bunning it up?
I feel
buttons. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level. We appreciate you taking the time. We appreciate you giving us the attention. I'm trying to, I can't pull to mind anything that I would have you guys do other than the usual. Please do. Yes. Jala, do it.
Special.
Yes.
So I'm going to be on the Monster Deer Monster podcast. this week. So like the day after this episode drops, the Monster Deer Monster episode will drop. And we are talking about The Neverending Story, the first movie and the book. And boy, I got some comments to talk about, so you better go download it and listen to that. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
So there.
It's, I mean, like, that is a beloved movie. Like, in the pre-roll, we are talking some, we were talking some shit about it. So people should know that you're not going to be there primarily
I'm not
going to
be, like, cheering for it.
Yeah, just to stoke their their nostalgia.
I went into trying to watch this movie this weekend expecting to be like, okay, it's going to have a little bit of junk going on. But, like, you know, I remember some stuff about this movie. It was pretty... Oh, boy. Like, go do me a favor and go rewatch the movie before you listen to the podcast. How about that?
Yeah, see, watch it as an adult and not as a kid. Yeah.
Wow. All right, but anyway, like, there will probably be, honestly, it'll be mostly, I would assume, a lot of comparison with the book and kind of explaining, you know, kind of an adaptation decay style.
Right.
This is what went wrong, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of a thing. That'll be coming out on Saturday. So that would be Saturday the 20th of June.
Nice. Yes. Very cool. I'm trying to think here, you know, the usual stuff to do for the show, ratings, reviews, all those kinds of things. Continue to look for causes you can donate to. There are more demonstrations mm-hmm. happening. There are bail funds out of Atlanta right now because people demonstrating because of the recent tragedy. But kick a couple of bucks over there if you can. Every little bit helps out. But otherwise, we're going to continue being here. Once again, Duckfest is going to be happening on June the 27th. June the 27th and 28th. The Level is going to be on June the 27th, Saturday night, Eastern Time. The schedule should be live by the time this episode comes out. So there we go. But I have been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words.
I'm Jolichon in all the places. You can find me there.
I'm Ben Merkel, and you can find David Moneysmith on Twitch at Moneysmith7.
That you can. And stick around for some titles. Okay. Who has titles?
I got three.
Okay.
Ice Princess. I grew up that day.
What was that in reference to?
That was Ben talking about Resident Evil stuff is incorrect in Resident Evil.
Gotcha.
I just found that out. I grew up that day. Yeah. And then think of the birds, Greg.
Okay. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I almost put down Think of the Birds, Greg, but I didn't want to do too much name-checking people in titles. I had one from way early, Half Evil.
Okay.
I had Ice Princess as well. I also had, I feel like this one's a strong contender, At First Gland.
Okay, yeah.
That's me.
Okay, Ben?
All right, I got six.
Whoa!
Oh, boy.
Hey.
So I also have Ice Princess. I also have I Grew Up That Day. I have, from way back, I have Scrotums with Necks. Okay. Talking about birds. I have I Don't Know How Invested I Am in That Weird Horny Lady. I have Falling Water Coolant System. And then I have Air in Space Museum.
Air in Space Museum. Okay. All right. And I don't have any. So the vote getter is Ice Princess, but we also have two votes on I Grew Up That Day. Who has a strong strong opinion between the two of those?
I enacted my strong opinion last week, so I revoke any rights.
I think Ice Princess got a callback later in the episode as well.
I believe so.
Yeah, Ice Princess came up multiple times. Yeah, I think I called Cole that like at least three times.
Yes. Yeah. Let's go with that. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
Was that intentional? That was bad. If that was intentional, and if that wasn't intentional, why wasn't it?
What intentional? Oh, cool.
Ice Princess, cool.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't intentional. That was the thing that I would have said regardless of what was put out there. So,
dude, yeah, that pun was dope.
Again, take about 25% off of there, Dennis. Yeah.
All right, we're gone. Talk to you later, guys.
Okay, take care, everybody.
See ya.
Goodbye. See ya.